21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for award-winning 21st Century Radio. Here's your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
You're listening to Bob Hieronymus on 21st Century Radio, and I hope you enjoy the show. And this is John Clive, who once had the pleasure of playing John Lennon in Yellow Submarine. I hope you enjoy this from a good friend of Bob Hieronymus.
Live a life of ease. Every one of us has all we need. Sky of blue and sea of green. In our yellow submarine.
Welcome back. 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus. Our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Kortner, and our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw. Now, to paraphrase John Lennon a bit, you might say I'm crazy, but I'm obviously not the only one. Well, I'm obviously not the only one who is still crazy about the Beatles' Yellow Submarine animated film that was originally released almost 44 years ago. Here it comes again to a theater near you after a four-year project to photochemically clean and repair the old prints and then remaster them for 4K digital resolution. Due to the delicate nature of the hand-drawn original artwork, no automated software was used in this process, and the work was all done by hand, frame by frame. Little did I know, 10 years ago, when my book Inside the Yellow Submarine was published, that we'd be talking about a second huge renovation and re-release of this film in 2012, when it was done once before and to great international fanfare in 1999. This 2012 remastering was originally planned to be released just on DVD and Blu-ray, but there was such a huge fan response to the announcement that big screen showings were scheduled in over 200 theaters this week. Zoe and I saw it last Thursday with Chris Kaltenbach, film critic for the Baltimore Sun and his family, and our engineer A.Y. Warshaw and his dad. And I can assure you this cleanup job brings out so much fine line and watercolor detail in the genius artwork of Heinz Edelman that the big screen experience is truly the best way to see it. You can find the scheduled movie theater showings all over the country at www.yellowsubmarinethemovie.com. That's www.yellowsubmarinethemovie.com. Joining us tonight, we are honored to have the man who led the teams who remastered the film so brilliantly, Paul Rutan Jr. of Triage Motion Pictures. Also joining us are two of the experts from the original film who were looking over the shoulder of Paul Rutan to be sure what he did to their film looked right. That would be Bob Balser, one of the animation directors on the original 1968 Yellow Sub film, and his wife and partner, Seema Balser, who remembers more details than just about anyone. Paul Rutan Jr. is the senior advisor of the photochemical and digital restoration services of EQ, where they specialize in film, digital, and video preservation and creating photochemical elements for digitizing and restored digital representations of the era. He's also the owner and artistic director of Triage Motion Picture Services in Hollywood, California, where they specialize in the restoration and preservation of motion pictures. He has been in the business for 38 years and is a living link to the past era of films and what they are supposed to look like. Previous to The Yellow Submarine, among the many other notable titles he has saved and preserved for the future are The Beatles' Hard Day's Night and Help. Bob Balser studied animation at UCLA Theater Arts Department with Bill Scholl, one of Disney's top animation directors. In 1959, he relocated to Europe, where he eventually opened his own studio in Spain and produced many prize-winning films. In 1967-68, he went to London as animation co-director of Yellow Submarine, which was followed by many, many other award-winning productions for the international market. He is a member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, which means he gets to vote on the Oscars, a member of the International Association of Animated Films, and a member of many international film festival juries and other professional organizations. Before we pick up with the Balsers and Paul Rutan, I want to point out a very special feature that we posted in conjunction with this interview on 21stCenturyRadio.com. It is a short Q&A that Jonathan Clyde of Apple Corps graced us with. Jonathan Clyde is the Apple representative who really shepherded this project through and has been a good friend of the Yellow Submarine for many years. All of us fans owe a great deal of gratitude to him. You can find Jonathan Clyde's answers to some of my questions on the Yellow Submarine page at 21stCenturyRadio.com. We recorded this interview last week with Paul Rutan on the phone from California and with Bob and Sina Balser via the Skype internet connection from Barcelona. Welcome to 21st Century Radio, Bob and Sina Balser and Paul Rutan.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I think I'm really looking forward to this.
That's so much.
Thank you for the invitation. It's going to be fun.
Paul, please tell us the difference between what you and your team have done to the Yellow Submarine and what was done to it for the release of the DVD in 1999?
We had different tools than they had in 1999. If you compare to the DVDs, you'd clearly see the difference. We were able to do a high-resolution scan on it, number one. Where in 1999, they did a normal NTSC U.S. standard scan, and 4K gives us more latitude and more information to work with. And what we did was we went through and first we cleaned up all the dirt that was left after we that's one thing. We photochemically restored the show before we scanned it. Mm-hmm. So that was one thing they didn't do in 1999. They scanned off of 1969 or 68 IP, and a lot of those defects are prevalent in the 1998 DVD. I can get really technical. It's the problem. It's the 98 DVD. It's very oversaturated and kind of crunchy, and ours is very bright and very smooth and very clean. Mm-hmm. And the colors, since this is for Blu-ray and not an archival reference, the colors are really vibrant now, far more than they've ever been.
By the way, what is the difference in the meanings of refurbish, restore, and renovate? I get this kind of mixed up here.
Yeah, a lot of people get it mixed up. Basically, I have my own opinion, which everybody has their opinions, and I'm an old photochemical hack. I've been doing it for 38 years, photochemically. Restoration is, or preservation, is to take the original film element and create a photochemical copy or a photochemical restored, meaning that all the bits and pieces are put back in that are missing, the tears are fixed, and you have a photochemical element to put in your library for 100 years. The digital is called restoration, and in this case it is a restoration, but it's basically a remastering. And the reason I say that is the digital is not a permanent archival element. Either if you put it on a hard drive or an LTO5, which is the current flavors. Mm-hmm. And also, what do you call a film that looks better than it did when it first came out? You know, it's certainly not a restoration. You're not restoring it to how it was because you're making it look better. Mm-hmm. So I like to call it a remastering. We restored and remastered it.
So now I have a better understanding of these, which I didn't in the beginning.
Well, that's my opinion. So,
and you're sticking to it, right? Little. That's your opinion and you're sticking to it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, Bob and Sima, it was just 13 years ago that the Yellow Submarine was last restored. What was your first reaction when you heard it was going to be restored again and re-released?
Well, he got so excited. They called from London, and it was news to us because we hadn't heard anything. They called me from London and said that Paul was, they said, restoring the film, And would I go up and see what they were doing, sort of give my opinion on the results? And I said, of course, naturally, I'd be more than glad. So what during the process, we were up to his studio two or three times to see what was going on. And when you see the comparison, because they showed me the DVD, the 99 DVD, next to this new version, and it's like day and night. You can't believe how brilliant, beautiful the colors are. It's absolutely spectacular. Hmm. So that's when them calling me, I got involved, and then Jonathan Clyde came over, and we looked at it together, and then we looked at the final bits that were put together and gave it the okay. And I had no idea that they were going to do a cinema release, because they kept talking about the 23rd of May, this BAFTA showing, and they wanted me to be there for that. And in California, they're having at the Grammy Museum, they're having the showing and release. I think it's going to be the release for the Blu-ray. So I'm pretty sure that the Blu-ray will come out on the 23rd in England and on the 29th in Los Angeles. So it soon will be available.
But I was so impressed with that. Well, we both were, with the care that these guys were taking with it. They were absolutely passionate about it and so tender, and apologizing or explaining that they wouldn't go too far because they wanted to be. They wanted the original brush strokes to show. Mm-hmm. And that was really very, very exciting and especially gratifying, the tenderness and the love that they were putting into this. It really was remarkable.
Well, I guess you were aware that Paul and his group had restored Help and Hard Day's Night when you heard...
Well, we found out about that afterwards, yeah.
Well, as soon as I saw... Some of that information, I realized, wow, how fortunate they were able to do this in this kind of way. That's what excited me more than anything, because obviously if they felt it was Help and Hard Day's Night were really much improved, then there's every good reason to expect this. And again, I think we also mentioned what was happening in trying to get a copy of The Yellow Submarine. You had to pay... a lot more than what we paid for them back in, because they were sold out, supposedly. At least they were told. We were always told. And, I had a friend who actually had to pay as much as $100 on it.
I can't understand why they didn't keep releasing it. They did clear the rights to it. Mm-hmm. There was a big problem before the 99 version because Michael Jackson owned the music rights to a lot of the stuff. It was very complicated, but they did clear it, and they did eventually release the film for a short cinema release in 99, mm-hmm. and they did have the DVDs available. I've got a couple of American copies, and I've got a couple of PAL copies, so mm-hmm. I'm surprised that they didn't keep it in the mm-hmm. market.
Yeah, so were we. Well, obviously, Paul didn't do this all by himself. Tell us, Paul, about your team and sister companies who worked on this project. You called them superb and talented and nothing less than the best.
Right. We have an artist that I work with on site named Randy Walker. And
He's great.
Yeah, when he first got started, he didn't realize that, this was an important film. Historically, as well as a Beatle, and once he got into it, he got passionate about it. And also, we work with a team in India through EQ is the name of the company, and they have 40 artists. And KJ, I'll call him KJ because I can't pronounce his name, is the leader of that group. And we send him copious notes, and he followed them to the letter, and did a superb job. Mm-hmm. There are 40 artists in India, and all those guys in India did was pick dirt out. And the problem with Yellow Submarine, of course, is because it was hand-painted, you have to make sure you don't pick out what's intended. A good example is the Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds sequence. You have to make sure you don't pick out what was intended to be there and what needs to be there. And they did a really great job with that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bob and Seema, were you surprised that this needed to be restored at all? I mean, I didn't know if you have digitally that it would have to be redone after a certain period of time, because Paul mentioned that, you know, it's not necessarily permanent. Is that right, Paul?
That's correct.
Yeah, so I thought finally we had something in 99 that would be the standard.
Well, you know, we saw it together in 99, Bob, and I was tremendously impressed with it and thought, you know, and they did a remix, because you have to think back to 68, where the soundtracks were four-track, magnetic four-track. So you had a music track, an effects track, a dialogue track, and a mix on the same, on the four-track. When in 99, when they redid it, they were now into digital sound, so they could have, you know, 50, 100 tracks to, and they remixed the music. And the Beatles, I had heard, said they had never heard their music sound so good.
Yeah, Ringo.
So the 99 version was certainly an exciting thing for me, but this new one is, you know, 10 steps above. I mean, we're into a new world.
Brave new world.
Brave new world.
Seema, do you have anything you want to add to that?
Well, only that they were talking mostly about the effects, and that they couldn't, originally they were limited to the, either you had a little bit more of this or a little bit of that, and so they were limited to the number of effects they could have. And in that remastered 99 version, of course they had all these recorded, but they simply could not have been, they weren't used. So in the 99 version, they went back and picked up a lot of the effects that were now in the film, which made a big difference.
Oh, it certainly did. Yes, all the changes they have made to the Yellow Submarine over the years have fortunately been good ones, and it is actually a better film now than when it was originally released. We're going to take a short break now, and when we return, we'll hear more about the frame-by-frame approach Paul Rutan and his crew had to take in order to clean up this classic film. We'll be right back.
This is Billy Cox with the Band of the Gypsies and the Jimi Hendrix Experience. You're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a Valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine?
We're back with our salute to the newly remastered Beatles Yellow Submarine film, playing again this weekend in theaters all over the country. Go to www.yellowsubmarinethemovie.com for a nationwide listing of theaters where you can see it during its limited engagement, or pre-order your copy of the DVD or Blu-ray from one of the links on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com. We will pick up with our conversation with Paul Rutan, Jr., who joined us by phone from his triage studio in California, where his company has been working since 2008 on cleaning and remastering this film. Also joining us from Barcelona via Skype are Bob and Seema Balser, who were both involved in the making of the original film in 1967 and 68. Bob was one of the primary animation directors. Well, Paul, much is made in the press release about the frame-by-frame nature of your work. As time-consuming as that must have been, why was that considered necessary for this film?
Well, we tried to use automated cleanup, which is called DRS. And it was the strangest thing, because we would put DRS on and line work would disappear.
Oh.
So what it was doing is it wasn't differentiating automatically between, you know, the drawings basically and the dirt, so it was impossible to use that without losing really pertinent information. Mm-hmm. The For instance, in Nowhere Man, there's a sequence where they walk off of a hill just before they go into the rainbow, and they're on a line, the boys, and the line disappeared. So that was that. We it was impossible to do any kind of automatic cleanup on that because it was degrading and artifacting the image.
I see. Good heavens.
A problem with any kind of a digital high resolution digital project is that sometimes to get rid of certain defects, you have to trade off with digital artifacts. Digital is not, I consider it a tool. A good tool, but it's not the end to beat all. I mean, sometimes you can do stuff and you can think the picture looks great and on the one hand, and then on the other hand, you'll pick up artifacting,
mm-hmm.
be it the lines or aliasing or, you know, there's all kinds of stuff, that of strangeness that happens.
Well, I assume this is a more labor-intensive than your average film restoration. How long did it take, and with how many people?
Well, we had 40 people in India, and it took, about 2 months. We put it on the fast track. Usually a project like this will take 6-7 months.
Mm-hmm.
But we put it on the fast track, and the guys in India really did a good job cleaning it up. Especially since I had a last-minute debacle that was pointed out to me, that the bulldog sequence goes back at the very last shot to the American version. And we had to rescan it and cut it in, and that was cleaned up here in this country because we didn't have time.
We're gonna touch back on that Hey Bulldog sequence because it seems to have gone through many different problems and reborn time and time again. Right, Bob and Seema?
Yeah, you know, people don't realize that there are three versions of the film. The first version is the English version that has Hey Bulldog. And they felt that there was too many endings and so forth, and they wanted to change the ending. So I redirected the ending of the film, and the American version, we cut out Hey Bulldog and added a lot of material. I can't remember. It's been a long time. I can't remember exactly which scenes we cut out and put the new ones that were put in there. So there were two versions, an English version and an American version.
Yeah.
And then when they restored it in 1999, they found the interpositives and so forth, and they just put everything together. Well, the film had become such an iconic thing at that point that it really didn't matter anymore whether it was 20 endings or 30 endings. The music is there, the color is there, the Beatles are there. So that was the third version, and now we've got the fourth version, which is the, I would hope, the definitive.
Mm-hmm. Again, back to digital mastery. I thought that we had hit the top of technology there, and obviously it's kind of shocking that almost everything, because in our radio shows, everything is dealt with that. That means that everything that we do is only really kind of temporary.
Yeah.
But then again, we were always taught that CDs were kind of permanent too. But that's
a little bit frightening, the fact that CDs and even DVDs starting to disappear.
Well, the cassettes, what about all those? They're long gone.
Well, yeah, that's the reason why they're now selling new cassette players, because a lot of people who had thrown out their VCRs, VHSs, and little audio cassette players, they're buying them again. I know all of my old-time radio collection, which I listen to all the time. If I didn't have them on cassette, they would have been lost on CD. I didn't
know that
CDs just died left and right, you know. And it's all your fault, too, Bob. I wanted to...
I know.
You can take it.
I collect music pre-1936. And it goes all the way into the 60s. It's really a tragedy that when they eliminated vinyl, they only selected, let's say you had an album in vinyl of, let's say, the Blue Baron.
Mm-hmm.
And they would only select one or two songs to go onto a CD, or none. So the CDs virtually created an elimination of so much vinyl, so much material, and I think, Bob, I think you'll agree with me, that I have it all. I have LPs and I have cassettes that I recorded it off of radio shows because the music doesn't exist on CD.
Whoa, boy. All right. Well, Paul, can you tell us which sequences in the Yellow Submarine posed the greatest challenges to work on?
My favorite section. Lucy in the Sky with
Lucy
Diamonds
in the sky.
Was definitely the hardest
mm-hmm.
because of the splashes of color and what color was intended, you know, what splashes were intended and what splashes were not intended. You know, a decision was made that anything that flowed with the imagery was intended. And because of that, I don't know how to say it. I guess it's avant-garde artwork on that sequence. That posed the biggest challenge, not to eliminate stuff that was supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's my favorite section, too, by the way. I like John Lennon, even though it's a cartoon and the Beatles weren't involved, he seems genuinely happy that, you know, mm-hmm. and then he goes into this where he becomes a dancer, which is interesting with the Beatles because there's also dancing sequence with ballroom dancers in Magical Mystery Tour, which is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I've always wanted to ask you this question, Bob and Seema.
Yeah.
Of all the different sequences within the work, Paul enjoyed the Lucy in the Sky sequence. Obviously, I enjoyed that as well. But what about you guys? What do you think about?
You know, I've been asked that question so many times, and I love the Sea of Time.
Sea of Time.
I love Nowhere Man. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just...
Yeah.
I'm so close to it all that I really can't say I have one favorite. Each one has got its story of what happened and how it came about, mm-hmm. including Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. So I'm too close to it to be able to say this is my very favorite moment mm-hmm. because I'm looking at the whole film as a whole.
What about you, Seema?
It's hard for me, too. The Sea of Monsters is really great. And I think if I really had to choose, that would be it.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many little tricky things in there. It's all good. I won't go into stories.
Yeah, all good.
Yeah, it really is all good. What do you think? We've been in communication with Anna Edelman. And do you know, by the way, Paul, was Anna Edelman told anything about this release or sent anything?
I don't know.
Okay. That's Heinz Edelman's.
That's a really, really good question. I would hope that somebody had communicated with her because, Heinz is really one of the guiding lights behind this film. It would be a crime if she's not, you know, sort of included, at least in terms of the knowledge,
Yeah, I agree. What do you think you're going to be speaking for Heinz now, Bob and Seema. What do you think his favorite areas of the Yellow Submarine were? We know what his least favorite ones were, but what about his favorite ones?
You know, I can't think of any favorite that...
Oh, well, probably the When I'm 64.
Yeah, When I'm 64, because we ran out of money, as you know.
Yes.
And Heinz said, I've got an idea where we can do a 1 minute of film very cheaply. And that's when I'm 64 and we can do with 1 minute of just with numbers. And it's a beautiful sequence. It's a gorgeous sequence.
Yeah.
However, that said, once it was storyboarded and once it was planned, it probably was the most expensive minute in the film. So, I mean, in order to get the results, you try to put your best effort forward and you do what you have to do in order to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Paul, let's talk about the cleaning and brightening of the artwork now. I understand that with film restoration, a common approach is to balance for flesh tones and let everything else fall into place based on that. Am I accurate in saying that?
For live action, I would say yes. For this particular project.
Well, but the color concept in Yellow Submarine has no relationship to reality, so everyone's flesh tones are quite different from one another.
Exactly.
So my question is...
change from shot to shot.
Yeah, shot to shot. Whoa. Yeah, so how can you tell when the colors are correct? What's a reliable reference point?
Well, I have actually the photochemical answer print that we made when we preserved it photochemically that was approved by Apple and artists in England, and I used that as a guide. And then I remembered that they had talked about certain things they wanted to see, like one of Paul's shoulders is brown in his jacket, and George's skin, is it George? Yeah, a little bit yellow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically, it turned out to be really subjective between Randy and I, the color palette. And using that photochemical print. The other prints that were made in 1968 were very faded and were impossible to use as a guide. We even used the 1998 version DVD as a reference as well. I like using references because I like being accurate.
Of course, yes. You like references because you like to write footnotes all the time. Is that right?
Yes.
Yep.
I'm not the filmmaker, and basically, you know, if I can get a reference, then I have more of an idea of what the filmmakers were getting at when they were shooting the film.
Well, let's go back to the Hey Bulldog sequence. It was cut from the original 1968 theatrical release, then restored in the 1999 DVD. We touched on this a little while ago, and your version matches the 1999 version in this regard. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. I want to ask Bob and Seema to comment a little bit here because, as we know, the Hey Bulldog area was one in which Heinz Edelman was very unhappy about because he felt, as you noted earlier, we had six or seven different endings here, had to end somewhere. But why do you think he thought those things?
You know, it was... the Beatles did not give us, they were supposed to give us four songs. And Hey Bulldog came in right at the end. And so it was sort of shoehorned into the film.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Heinz did some designs for it and so forth, the Bulldog, he really disliked the sequence and he disliked having interrupting the flow of the film. And so he was probably one of the major voices that said we have to change the ending of the film.
Mm-hmm.
But it was Heinz, it was even Al Brodax, George Dunning at the time felt that, you know, it was everybody loves a song. It's a beautiful song. And
it's crudely done.
But it certainly is not being done the way it was done. It was certainly not in the same style as the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And not with the quality. It was just crude, and it still is. It's not anything comparable to what the film is about.
Is that, you think, because it was so rushed?
That's part of it. I mean, you know,
you could
sit down and write a book about, you know, what, the things that, if you had all the notes of what went on at the time, it was rushed, certainly, but everything was rushed. I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, the film had its delivery date. You know, the premiere was, when was it, July 17th? Something
yeah.
of that, in 1968.
That's correct.
And
yeah.
They had the cinema reserved, and they had the print came out, I think, the morning of the show.
Yes, I think so.
You know, so, I mean, whatever happened, it was sheer miracle. We've talked about this before, and the fact that it came out the way it did is a miracle.
Well, that's the reason why a film needs to be done, literally, on the creation of this film. Yes, I do believe a documentary film should be made about the charmed atmosphere that surrounded the making of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine. And I'll tell you more about those ideas when we return from this break. When we return, we'll examine the controversial editing and restoring of the Hey Bulldog sequence with Paul Rutan Jr., who is responsible for the 2012 remastering of this film, and Bob and Seema Balser, who were instrumental in the creation of the 1968 original film. This is 21st Century Radio, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rayman's Eric of the Doors, and you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me?
This is 21st Century Radio, and I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we are in the middle of a conversation between Paul Rutan Jr., the head of the team at Triage Motion Picture Services and EQ, who lovingly cleaned and remastered the Yellow Submarine film. Also joining us from Barcelona via Skype are Bob and Seema Balser, an admirable partnership team instrumental in the making of the original 1967 and 68 film. Bob Balser was one of the animation directors, and Seema Balser was on set, frequently taking copious notes for her journal and posterity. Go to www.yellowsubmarinethemovie.com for a nationwide listing of theaters where you can still see it on the big screen during its limited engagement this week, or pre-order your copy of the DVD or Blu-ray from one of the links on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com. We're going to pick up where I was explaining my idea for why a documentary film should be made about the creation and long-lasting appeal of this film, The Beatles' Yellow Submarine. A film needs to be done on the creation of this film for people to really understand just really what went into it. My words in the book, you know, they're words. But to know and actually hear someone say, look, just before the show, we just got it snuck in there. I mean, it tells you a lot about the love that you guys had in getting this thing together at an impossible time for a ridiculous amount of money and for help, little or help, no help from the Beatles. But you surprised at that, Bob?
No, but they hated the TV series of the Beatles. Mm-hmm. And so, the TV series that was made in the United States by King Features has never been shown in England.
It was made a TVC.
It was made a TVC, but it's never been shown on English television. The Beatles just wouldn't allow it. They didn't like the voices, Americans imitating English voices. And so they really felt that this Yellow Submarine thing was going to be more of the same. So they really didn't want to have anything to do with us. And it wasn't, as you know, until way into the film when they started to see the results that they suddenly said, hey, we want to be involved.
Yeah.
Then it was too late and there was no money left.
That's really an important story.
Well, I'll just say, add one thing. You know, I reread your book every once in a while, Bob, and it's such a great thing that you have preserved so many of the people's opinions and so much of the story. I don't know whether anything more could be done than you've done to put that forward.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. But I'd like to see that acted out, because it was a real thrill for me to have learned those things firsthand from all of you guys. When did I talk to over 45 you folks involved? And it really, and you know, the struggles that we had with Al Brodax on this, and he came out with his own book, and it was, in my opinion, could have been a lot better. That's about as nice as I can say.
You
are so kind.
Could have been. I mean, and what he charged poor John Coates and everybody else with was unbelievable. It was unbelievable. I better calm down here.
I don't even know whether
We don't want to draw you into this controversy, Paul, because it was quite an extraordinary
experience.
I'm aware of it. Oh, you are. You are aware of it. And, you know, and then it was just a few, less than a half a year or maybe a year ago, in which you have a person by Ron Campbell coming out saying basically he did just about everything. And nobody challenged him, and all because Al Brodak said, "Here's the man." And that really was really hell, as far as I was concerned.
And once it gets on Wikipedia or whatever it is, then that becomes the law.
That's the law.
believe everything you read on the internet.
You have to.
Everything is true.
Oh, that's right. If it's on the internet, it's
true.
Yeah. That's a good thing we understand that, Paul, and it's a good thing you related that. Now, Paul, back to in restoring Hay Bulldog, because this is a real major part of this history. What kind of work was done restoring these Hay Bulldog revised parts of the film?
Well, we had to re-edit it because 99.9% of the picture was scanned from my brand new interpositive that we made on the American version. So it had to be re-edited. We had to edit the Bulldog sequence, which was from 1968. We had to re-edit it back into the picture. And what I discovered was that it started a lot sooner than I thought. I thought it was just a chunk that they put in and then took out. And it turned out that there are sequences where there are shots that are shorter, there are different shots. It was quite a bit more detailed than I thought. But we were able to edit it all in. And I agree with Bob. I don't know if I should say this, because I asked the representative from Apple about it. It doesn't flow with the continuity of the picture. And Jonathan said if we left that out, we'd be killed by the Beatle fans.
Well, that certainly was one of those things that were looked forward to by them. But, you know, by the way, one person asked me to ask this question. Are there plans to include the substituted filler footage from the 68 as a kind of a bonus track on the DVD, or wasn't the bonus tracks touched in regards to this process?
No, I sent them all the extras that were taken out, and there's a song in there that they would have problems with rights, and so they weren't able to add that as a filler. It's funny, they have rights problems with their own song.
What song was that?
I don't remember.
Well, it'll come back to you. When it does, just...
Bob, do you remember?
No, I don't.
Seema, do you remember?
I don't even know what you're talking about. An extra song that was in the American version?
No,
It was a part. It was just a little snippet of another song from another album.
Good heavens, no.
Beautiful People, was there? Yeah, how's it feel to be one of the beautiful people?
I have to screen it again to see. Well, they had problems. They told me that they wouldn't be able to use that as an extra in the new package.
I see. Well, we have the Yellow Submarine audience out there is enormous in the film world, especially. And so they probably, you know, I've only watched this film 422 times, but there's some out there that I'm certain have watched it close into the thousands. The guy, Pixar.
Pixar,
yeah. I've forgotten his name right now. But John Lasseter.
Yeah,
John Lasseter. Yeah, his favorite film in the whole world. And you know, I'm amazed that of all the things he's done, that he considers it such. But one last thing in regards to this Hay Bulldog thing, because a lot of people are going to be talking about it no matter what. They're going to be looking for it. I know Jack Stokes is going to be happy, very happy to see this work further restored. But I have to ask this question. Did you notice any difference, Bob and Seema, in the 99 to 2012 versions of Hay Bulldog? Does it work any better than the earlier versions?
No
difference, sir.
I mean, you know, the color, when you look at it side by side, the color is more brilliant. It's more, but the action is you can't change the animation and can't change the planning and the timing of the song. So, but that said, Bob, the audience that love the Beatles music are going to love Hey Bulldog, and they're going to sit and sing with it and enjoy it. And so you can't take that away from them.
Nope, you shouldn't. Okay, now, Paul, other than the original animation director and friend, you know, in our introduction, we talk about the greatness of this man, Bob Balser. Bob, you were the very first person I talked to in this book.
You know that?
1991. And it was such a thrill. I got to tell you, it was such a thrill to talk with and knowing how close you and Seema worked together. It was like talking to a team.
We are a team.
Yeah. And that's what I love about that. Paul, other than the original animation director Bob Balser and his wife Seema, who were called in by Apple to view and approve the direction, did anyone else from the crew get to preview it?
Yes, in England. And I don't know who they were.
Maybe Jack Stokes, Bob, you think?
I don't know whether Jack, he probably did, but I know that John Coates saw it with Jonathan Clyde, so, and they gave me feedback as well.
And they gave you the same kind of feedback that you're giving me, is that right?
Yeah, they asked me to let them know what I thought. I told them I thought it was terrific. Paul sent whatever work they had to London. They showed, looked at it in London, agreed that it was terrific, and came back with a few comments, and I told them that, you know, I had seen the stuff and comments that I had made on the work was in work and was being cleaned up, so there was nothing to worry about. It was in good hands.
Mm-hmm. Paul, is your new restoration work going to be, I think we've answered this, but I want to make sure we have for a person who wants this question answered. Is it going to be what is released on Blu-ray release, or is the Blu-ray the same restoration that was issued in 1999?
No, the Blu-ray is my restoration.
Okay.
And they're going to release the Blu-ray and an NTSC version for those of us who don't have Blu-ray in the same package. I have one thing to say about Bulldog.
Yes, sir.
Which is interesting, that I just recently found out, is that Hey Bulldog was the very last song that Paul and John collaborated on.
I didn't know that.
After that, it was either a John song or a Paul song.
Huh. I guess that it's always caused some divisions then, huh?
Yeah, that was the very last song they actually collaborated on from beginning to end.
Bob, Seema, and Paul, have you guys heard of any new plans on a live-action remake of The Yellow Submarine like the alleged Zemecki Disney production?
No, that's been called off. They had everything pretty well prepared. They had picked the actors. They had gotten the rights to all the music. They were in planning stage. I have mixed feelings about it. I can't imagine what the hell they would have done with it. That would be my only interest, is what the hell would they have done with it?
The last rumor I heard was that they're going to do it in 3D.
In 3D?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I see.
A brand new version.
What do you think of that idea, Bob?
Well, you know, there's a big difference between remaking the film and going into a 3D version. And I would be looking forward to seeing what the effect would be. I think it might be very exciting, because there's a lot of beautiful stuff there that would work beautifully in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all together now, the fish floating through the sea, the sea of monsters. There's plenty of open spaces. They flying through the sea of holes. I mean, there are some wonderful things that, you know, would be very, very effective. So I'd be looking forward to seeing what it would look like.
Seema, you got anything to say on this?
Well, we're curious more than anything.
But that's good enough. Well, we're going to take a break now for the news at the top of the hour. But when we come back, we have more from Paul Rutan Jr. and Bob and Seema Balser on the 2012 remastering of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine film. Visit our website at 21stcenturyradio.com and click on the Yellow Submarine page there. Not only will you find information about my book Inside the Yellow Submarine, The Making of the Beatles Animated Classic, but tons of other stuff as well, including special fan salutes, trivia contests, and exclusive interviews with co-creator artists of the film that I interviewed after that book was published. If you don't mind me blowing my own horn for a few seconds, here it goes. Sir George Martin, the music director of the film, wrote the introduction to this book, where he noted, "It is an amazing essay on the development of a cultural icon and makes a fascinating story." Animation World magazine called my book an indispensable companion to the movie, and Cahiers du Cinéma said Dr. Bob became a part of the film's history while researching this book, essential in the orchestration of the Yellow Submarine conventions and anniversary parties, as well as the 1999 re-release of the film to theaters and DVD. Closing out next hour, we will hear from Toby Blumenthal, director of facility sales for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, about the one Beatle who loved Yellow Submarine more than all the others. That would be Ringo, who likes to say, "That song has given me a career." And Ringo's coming to Baltimore next month. Get your tickets before they're all sold out from bsomusic.org. June 24th, Ringo Starr and his all-star band performing one night only at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall, bsomusic.org.
Talk around the clock and breaking news now on Talk Radio 680 WCBM Baltimore and WCBM.com.
Fox News Radio. I'm Lisa Lucera. After $2 billion in losses,
21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus and Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
First time I saw that nowhere man, that nobody, I knew he was somebody.
Your eyes.
Hello there, blue people. Won't you join us? Hook up and otherwise co-mingle. What do you say?
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and our executive producer and research assistant, Laura Courtner, and our engineer is A.Y. Warshaw, and we are celebrating the new remastering of the classic Beatles film, The Yellow Submarine. Our guests are Paul Rutan Jr., the director of Triage Motion Picture Services in Hollywood, who did the work for this new 2012 release, and Seema and Bob Balser, who was the original animation director of The Yellow Submarine in 1968. In this final segment, we are going to find out why the digital age has made film restoration a bigger challenge than ever, and whose idea it was to clean up this film once again. Paul, Bob, and Seema, again, this is a question for all three. After laboring with care on either an original or restored film, what do you think when your work is then cropped to match the HDTV or letterbox format?
Oh, God, that, you know, that's a, I like to see the film in its original format. Mm-hmm. But if, you know, there are other formats that if they have to do something in order for it to be seen, I would rather it be seen than not cropped or not. Naturally, any kind of cropping makes the person who's doing it, it's their decision as to how it's going to look. So it's not the same film that I made.
That's true. That's true. Paul, yeah. What do you think?
I'm against. I prepared this in its original aspect ratio from beginning to end. The HD Cam SR is in 1.66. The DCPs are in 1.66. And if the Blu-rays come out in 16:9 like Help did, I'm not going to be very happy because we have a process called tilt and scan, and it's okay for some films, but what that is you can go up and down to capture image that is lost because you've cropped it, because if you crop it, crop is crop. That means you lose some of the image. So we did not do a tilt and scan version of that because Apple told us that they were going to retain the original aspect ratio, which is the English widescreen 1.66. So there should be little black bars on the sides of the frames. Then that would indicate 1.66. If the Blu-rays, I'm not going to be happy about that.
Yeah, I don't think I will.
Because you're going to lose information top and bottom.
Mm-hmm. It certainly will. and a lot of heads are cut off. A lot of other things are.
Well, one thing I can think of in particular, because we talked about this when we were working on it, is when they come out from the rainbow. I guess that's one of my favorite parts, too. When they come out, the Nowhere Man, when they come out from the rainbow, they're on a black line, and that'll be gone if they crop it. Oh. And that black line is a record.
Yes.
And when they spin around with the boob with Nowhere Man, they're actually on a record, an LP, and that would be cut off. And that's, I think, a pertinent part of the action. It's just a line, but it would be cut off.
Paul, was this restoration as difficult as you thought it would be?
No. It was, considering we started it in 2008. And the photochemical part was very, very difficult because I had to track down a bunch of materials, because one of the problems with a company like Deluxe or something like that is that after the show is finished, the material is just left to languish, and it had to be all gathered up and inspected, and I had all kinds of NG pieces of film and good pieces of film and takes and all kinds of stuff. So photochemically, it was a challenge to put it all back together and to find the replacements that I needed for damage that had happened over the last 40 years to the original negative. Mm-hmm. But the result of that was, when we scanned it, I had everything in place. So the scanning was, except for the stupid mistake I made in Bulldog, the scanning was easy. And it was a much easier remastering than it would have been if we were starting from scratch.
Will the Yellow Submarine film need to be restored again in the future?
Well, it may have to be remastered in the future. One of the things Apple wanted was 4K. Because in case some other kind of technology came out that provided higher resolution, that they would have the highest resolution in a 4K, mm-hmm. LTO, or a hard drive. That may change as well, that, you know, in 5 years, that there may no longer be the same technology that there is now, that there's been so many changes already in the last 2 years. I'm restoring films that, well, I'll give you an example. Help was done on, I restored that photochemically, so that's all taken care of, but then that was transferred to high def. Well, high def is not Blu-ray, so it's not Blu-ray compatible. Hmm. And that was delivered in a D5 high def file, and it's not compatible with Blu-ray, so that would have to be, in order to do Blu-ray, that would have to be rescanned. Mm-hmm. So it would have to be redone. A Hard Day's Night was never done in high def. It was always done in NTSC and in PAL. The 50th anniversary of that is coming up in a couple of years, and they need to, the owners, which is the Beatles and Bruce Karsh, need to think about that, because that is only available on DVD, and it's not available in Blu-ray or a higher resolution, so that may very well have to be re-restored again.
God, it sounds
and
like
Yellow
that.
Submarine, there isn't any reason for me to think that in the next 10 years, or just like the last one was 98, you thought it was the end-all, the beat-all,
yeah.
And it wasn't. I have no reason to think that someday that's going to have to be redone again.
So those of us who are used to buying the Beatles on 45s, 33s, cassettes, CDs, have something to look forward to. We're going to have to buy them all again for another reason. Paul, you said that refurbishing the film is becoming a lost art and science. What are some of the difficulties of saving films that are 40, 50, 60 years old?
Basically, it has to do with the look, that people need to understand the look of a film and how it looked when it was released. Like I said, I've been doing this since 1974, and that's all I've done is work on old films, and I have an idea of what the look should be. I bought a book called All My Friends Are Dead just recently. It was supposed to be funny, and it was very funny. The bottom line is that all the people that I learned from, that taught me, and whose brains I picked have passed on. A new generation of kids are coming up that don't have a clue on the ethics of the era, which is what I call it, which I speak about, is ethically, how do you want this material to look? Ethically, you want it to look like it looked when it first came out, and that's going away because the colleges are no longer presenting the history of filmmaking. The kids that are getting in and working on it don't understand what it's supposed to look like, which is why I'm glad I got Yellow Submarine, because it could have gone someplace and they could have turned it into Nickelodeon or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Japanese anime.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I have a really strong feeling about that. My son is involved in the work as well, and he's been doing it now for 12 years, and I hope he continues. Because he has an idea. We do work that goes back all the way to the early 1900s, late 1800s, and we know how the material is supposed to look. Unfortunately, that it's dying. It's a dying art.
Yes. There seems to be so many areas of knowledge that's happening in. Well,
right.
The last question I have for all three of you is this, and give it some consideration and thought. About 2 months ago, I had no idea this was going on. All of a sudden, it happens, and it's like a whole brave new world, especially in my thinking and making sure that this film would live on and on. Throughout this entire process of trying to see the history of the film and the co-creating, because the film was not created just by one person, there were so many co-creators. Would you agree with that, Bob?
Definitely.
I mean, and so many great minds. I mean, you've got we didn't say any much about Hines today, or Charlie Jenkins, or George Dunning, or, you know, and Jack Stokes is not here. But I mean, there are so many, but he's still alive. But, I mean, he's not here on the phone. When you look at this growth of something that I believe it touches the heart, this film touches the heart of generations upon generations, and I think this is one of the reasons why people in Apple before had decided to not put all of that time and energy in, and now it looks like they're forced to, because it's something that is needed. It's like for this particular time. So, after all of that, my question basically is this. What do you think of this process? Why is such a film like this become so important in regards to four and maybe five generations?
Go ahead, Paul.
It's a good story, and the animation is unique, extremely unique. It's a story that the adults will enjoy because it'll remind them of the days where they would take acid and go to the theaters, and the children will enjoy it because it's a good children's story. Mm-hmm. It's just a good movie. I enjoy watching it. I've seen it hundreds of times by now.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoy it. I enjoy the music. I enjoy the way that Bob and his crew animated the musical numbers. A lot of it, I laugh still and enjoy it. It's a cartoon that just basically right alongside Disney, maybe even more so, because it's still relative to this society.
It's not a fairy tale.
Not a fairy tale.
It's not a fairy tale, and it's also not passé, you know?
Right.
It's something that the kids can enjoy and understand, and the adults can enjoy and understand as well. And it's got good music in it. And it could introduce a lot of kids to the Beatles.
Well, it certainly is doing that. I mean, I know children, because I put DVDs in their hands just recently, 2 and 3 years old, that it is the one thing that they watched almost every night before they go to bed. It's thrilling to see it from that perspective. What do you think, Bob and Seema?
Yeah, the thing, I agree with Paul. I think the film functions on so many levels. I mean, you did such a marvelous job of analyzing that in your book. But my biggest pleasure is seeing little 2 and 3 year old kids loving the film. As you talked about, you know, it was a team effort. And nobody working on the film said, we're going to do an iconic film. We're going to do a great film. We had a lot of fun, and I think that comes across on so many different levels. I think it's going to be a film that's going to live forever.
Yeah.
Basically, though, you never said that you were going to do a children's film, so you're not talking down to the children. I think they realize that, but mostly it's just the music is wonderful, the color is gorgeous, and you feel good. It's a feel-good movie. All you need is love.
Well, you said, I think, the right word there. You know, maybe because of the intuitive way it came together with so many brilliant minds, and there were multiple geniuses working on this film. And when you get a group of geniuses working together, you're bound to do something that is so deep and profound that it can change whole ideas and philosophies. So that's my bias, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
And that's and all their things. Oh, is that what we did?
That's right.
The Beatles were trendsetters on that. When they did that, All You Need Is Love for the first worldwide transmission, you know, we had enemies in Eastern Europe that, you know, they heard this All You Need Is Love, and it was like, well, these people are supposed to be evil.
Mm-hmm.
And not the Beatles, but the West. And maybe they're not evil. Maybe they're not, if they're singing about love.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, whose idea was this to redo it at this particular time?
Well, I had talked to Jonathan about it, and he said there's a hole, because they had come out with the book again. They had a thing going on with iTunes that had Yellow Submarine, and you can get a free book if
you buy.
I haven't figured out how to open yet. They said there's a hole because Yellow Submarine is not available on DVD or Blu-ray.
That's right.
And we need to fill that hole. Now, when I first talked to Jonathan, it was going to be just a small project. They were going to not be in theaters. They were just going to maybe do a couple of festivals and then just slip it in on the market. And I think that what's happened with the cultural phenomena of this coming out again, you know, now all of a sudden it's going to be in 200 theaters, and I'm getting calls, which is not my department, but I'm getting calls and emails from theaters that don't have the digital equipment that are asking, we want to run the film.
Mm-hmm.
Jonathan wanted one DCP, that's a digital cinema package. He wanted one. Now they've made over 200 of them now.
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, we have it being released on the 10th all over the country. The premiere was actually in Houston about a month ago, or Austin, I'm sorry. Then it was in New York on the 5th. And then, of course, it's going to be released on the 10th in 200 cities.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Well, it certainly is going to lift the planet's consciousness. I know how corny this sounds. I know. But this kind of thing about unconditional love and assisting and helping other people, which we seem to have forgotten a great deal about in this country in the last 8-10 years, is really the key for us coming together. And if we don't do it soon, you know, I think film like this can bring people together. We really need that on this planet. Mythology that's hidden within it, that wasn't consciously done, I think that's part of it. I think that Joseph Campbell and Carl Jung and Maslow and all those other guys knew what they were talking about. Well, boy, I want to thank you guys for joining us. I'd never expected 2 months ago to be talking about this again.
We pretty much covered a lot of material here.
Well, we sure did. You got any other last comments there, Seema?
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
Well, you're very welcome. It's a joy and a pleasure. Paul, do you have a last word to say?
Yeah, I just thank you for inviting me, being just a technician.
Oh, come on, Paul.
I hope it's watched. I mean, I hope people go and see it, and I hope they bring their kids, which disturbs me that it's being released on a Thursday at 8 o'clock, so you know that they're not going to be able to bring their little children. And I hope that when they release this Blu-ray that it's reasonably priced, you know, people be able to afford it in this economy.
Well, guys, thank you for joining us. I mean, it really, this is quite a thrill. Yes, that was quite a thrill to hear the opinions of the 1968 original animation director and the 2012 restorer of the Yellow Submarine, who are working together to launch this new release. And coming up next, we'll be talking about the lead singer on Yellow Submarine. That's right, Ringo Starr. Our guest is Toby Blumenthal, the director of facility sales for the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, who has secured a one-night-only performance of Ringo Starr and his all-star band at the Meyerhoff Symphony Hall. June 24th is the date, and bsomusic.org is the place to go for more information and to purchase tickets. This is 21st Century Radio. I'm Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and we'll be right back.